Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck. We are switching up the format a little bit on this weekend show and next weekend show for both hours. We're going to be focusing exclusively on markets and investing. In the first hour, I am focusing on a more broad look at the markets and money flows. Quite frankly, what sectors are outperforming and really what we should be focusing on. In the second hour, diving a bit more into the precious metals sector and dealing with some more of the exploration and junior companies. I want to hear all of your feedback, please. This kind of renewed focus of our show and our website. I know we still have a large following that likes to comment and talk about politics. That is why I'm still posting on our website a dedicated political posting every morning so that you all can share your opinions back and forth. But we are refocusing the show and the site more towards investing and markets. That is what supports this show. And quite frankly, that seems to be what a lot of you tune in to learn about. Some of the political back and forth does scare some new investors away from the show. I'm really just trying to reach out to as many investors, as many of you who are trying to learn about managing your money in the best way possible. So please, again, everybody, let me know what you think. I want to know how you all feel about this new direction that we are going in. That being said, let's start off this show. I am kicking off the show with Jesse Felder. He is the founder and editor of The Felder Report and one of my favorite guests to feature on the weekend show for broad market comments especially. And Jesse, let's start off with the US dollar. You recently posted an article to your subscribers that outlined that you're still watching the dollar closely. You made a comment at the very beginning of the year that 2020 will be the year to watch the greenback. You thought that there could be a decline in the dollar, which could possibly mark the end of the massive bull market in financial assets. Now, there are two different concepts here. Let's start off with the dollar, its continued volatility, and it's trading in this generally lower range, but you look at a much longer term 20-year chart, dollar is kind of in the middle of this very wide range that it's been in. What are the key factors that you are watching when it comes to the dollar?
So, I wrote at the very beginning of the year that it's 2020 will be the year to watch the dollar, and it's been an exciting year to watch it. We had the big spike in the dollar, you know, back in the spring as a part of the pandemic and a flight to quality or a flight, you know, the fear trade. People panicked into dollars, and then we've had the big dollar sell-off as a result of, you know, the Fed printing $3 trillion in a very short period of time. I've said, you know, it's important to watch the dollar because I do think the main narrative that's driving the bull market in both stocks and bonds is so long as the Fed is printing money, you know, interest rates can't go up, the bond market will be supported, and, you know, the stock market will also be supported as well through that money printing. So, but at some point, that money printing is going to create a bear market in the dollar. And then the Fed will be forced to choose in either supporting the financial markets or supporting the currency. They can't do both. So I do think that the decline in the dollar is probably a resumption of the bear market in the dollar that started a couple of years ago. But I think in the short run, people have gotten too bearish dollars. The positioning has just gotten way too crowded, too many dollar shorts and euro longs. And that probably needs to be unwound. And so, you know, I look at a variety of things in terms of fundamentals. You know, inflation is probably one of the important short-term drivers. You know, rising inflation is dollar bearish. Falling inflation is dollar bullish. We've seen a pickup in inflation as a result of the fiscal stimulus, but that was just kind of a short-term sugar rush. And the weak economy is probably very disinflationary, which is probably, since we're not going to, it looks like we're probably not going to get another fiscal package, I do think that's disinflationary and dollar bullish in the short run. And so, you know, that's just one factor. But I think it's really careful to pay attention to the dollar right now, because there's been a very close inverse correlation or negative correlation between the stock market and the dollar. So the dollar weakness since the spring has been almost perfectly correlated to stock market strength. And so a dollar rally would potentially mean a continuation of kind of this correction that we've seen in the stock market since, September.
Now, when talking about the dollar, we also have to look at other countries, especially Europe, because of how weighted that dollar index is towards the euro. And one thing that I just don't still quite understand is the dollar weakness in the face of this euro strength, because of the fact that, hey, Europe continues to shut down. We even heard from the Bank of England about increasing their bond buying program. I realize the Fed is still kind of sitting on the sidelines, waiting for even the ability to print more money from the U.S. government. But shouldn't this continued weakness in Europe and the continued push on the accelerator of easy money policies from European central banks, shouldn't that be driving the dollar higher?
Potentially in the short run. I think that the main driver of the dollar in terms of those policies is going to be the continued adoption of modern monetary theory here in the United States. When you have both parties, essentially there's a bipartisan consensus in Washington, now growing bipartisan consensus, that we don't need to worry about the growing debt because we can always print the money to pay back those obligations. Now, that's something that is much more difficult for European nations to do. With a European central bank, you know, each country doesn't have its own central bank really, you know, any longer that's in charge of its currency. So they don't really have the ability, you know, the direct ability like the United States to say, we are going to literally just print money to pay our obligations. And because we know we can do that, we can take on far more debt than we otherwise thought we were able to. So I do think that's probably dollar bearish over the long run. But like I said, in the short run here, the this MMT has been essentially put on hold because we can't get it together to put together another fiscal package. So that inability to put together a fiscal package and the fact that the Fed has essentially not grown its balance sheet for months is short-term dollar bullish. I think that's why we've seen at least a halt in the dollar decline over the last couple of months, and possibly why we could see a dollar rally going forward over the short run is that MMT narrative has essentially been put on hold.
Okay. But again, it's just on hold. It's not going away anywhere. It will come back into the U.S. It's just the stall in the government is really handcuffing the Fed. Now, you mentioned the relationship between the dollar and the U.S. equity markets, that inverse correlation. What about the relationship between the dollar and some other so-called kind of currency assets like gold or even like Bitcoin? Both are doing well. Bitcoin is breaking out to a more extreme degree than gold, but gold is still up for the year substantially.
Yeah, and to me, one thing that has been worrisome to me about, you know, I'm a long-term gold bull, and, you know, I've been talking with you about this for at least a couple of years now. Short-term, I'm more concerned, you know, gold peaked around the same time, you know, maybe about a month before the NASDAQ did. Gold peaked in, what was it, late July, early August. The NASDAQ peaked in late August, early September. And they've had a very positive correlation. So it's the stock market has been negatively correlated to the dollar. And that goes along with this mindset of as long as the Fed is printing money and devaluing the currency, it should be good for assets like stocks and gold. And that's one of the things that's been worrisome to me is that if we do see a dollar rally, it's probably bearish not only for stocks, but gold and probably Bitcoin too. All of these things have been correlated to each other in essentially a risk on, risk off manner. Investors go risk on, it's good for NASDAQ, it's good for gold, it's good for Bitcoin. They go risk off and it's not, you know, it's bad for these things. And so I do think the dollar rally, you know, that I see is potentially, you know, bearish in the short run for all of these things.
What's your time frame in terms of short run? Is that just to the end of the year? Is that through the Q1, Q2 of next year? What is that time frame?
Yeah, it's several months. It's probably through, you know, at least first quarter. I do think probably next year sometime we will get a fiscal, and it could be, you know, before the end of the year. It might not be until Biden's in office. But I did see something today. Trump doesn't want to, you know, have his name associated with another fiscal package before he leaves office, if you, you know, before Biden takes over. So we might not get a fiscal package. Eventually, we will get a fiscal package, and the Fed will be forced to monetize whatever fiscal package we see. So if that's $1 trillion, $2 trillion, you know, the Fed will be forced to expand its balance sheet by that amount. And that's probably very dollar bearish again. And so whenever that happens, that's probably when we see another decline in the dollar. So to me, you know, that probably doesn't happen until after Biden's inaugurated.
Now, you just brought up the Fed. Just a quick comment from you regarding the Fed this week. The statement was about as boring as it could be and pretty much a copy of the last Fed meeting. As we have outlined, the Fed really has their hands tied in terms of what they can do. But what do you think about the Fed's role in all this and the statement from this week?
You know, it was most interesting to me that the Fed continues to be the only, I guess, I don't want to say adult in the room, because I don't really see them, you know, as serving that function. But right now, they are still calling attention to the weak economy. And it seems like with the stock market having soared since, you know, late March, nobody really sees that the economy is still very, very weak. If we look at, you know, jobless claims and economic activity and these types of things, we're still essentially right now as bad as we were at the worst part of the recession associated with the financial crisis. So things are really still very difficult for the economy, for the job market. We're still seeing whatever it is, 700,000, you know, unemployment claims every week. So, you know, that was something the Fed made a point to say, things are still really difficult. We're not out of the woods by any stretch. And with cases still soaring, soaring to new highs, this is a difficult time we're in right now. And it seems like nobody else realizes this. And I really do think that's the most important takeaway from the Fed's meeting and statement this week.
All right, Jesse, let's get into another topic all related to the markets, and that deals with money flow. Something else you've been writing about, something you and I were talking about off mic before recording, deals with money flows first and foremost into volatility. The VIX has remained relatively high during all of this, shows that investors are still taking protection. Give us a little recap on what you've seen in terms of money flows and volatility.
Well, you know, it's, I think Christopher Cole put it best. He tweeted earlier today, and actually he has been for a few weeks now, at least. I mean, he's been writing about this for years, that the stock market is really just a derivative now of the options market. It's the tail wagging the dog. And so what he means by that is simply, you know, something that we've talked about before, Corey, which is we've seen the volume in the options market just explode this year. It's been bigger than anything we have ever seen before in history. It's a clear speculative mania, as Stan Druckenmiller's put it. But there are consequences with that, where you have the options markets essentially moving the stock market. So we've talked about when we see massive call buying in individual stocks, right? The market makers end up being short calls. They have to go buy the underlying stock, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that pushes prices higher. We've seen kind of something similar with this, where we saw volatility was really, really high. There's a lot of uncertainty around the presidential election, and there still is to some degree. But the volatility indexes like the VIX were, across many months, were very, very high. And it was a very strangely skewed option, you know, volatility picture heading into this election. And so what we saw heading into this was a lot of short selling, of volatility heading into, you know, in the futures markets, which is, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy there. So you sell short volatility, and that forces market makers to be long volatility. What do they do to hedge their long volatility? They go buy S&P futures. That's part of it. The other side of it, we saw huge put buying in the VIX. And so when you see this put buying in the VIX, market makers end up being short VIX puts. So when the VIX starts going down, they have to start going and essentially shorting VIX even more than it already is to hedge their position. So this is very complicated kind of derivatives of derivatives of derivatives. But essentially, with the way people have been trading this and been positioned for this, it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy that we'd see a massive rally in the market this week. And it's really just structural. I don't think it, you know, people have been trying to interpret what people see in the markets and what it means for X, Y, and Z. It's really the same thing we've been seeing since late 2017, early 2018, which is these tails, you know, wagging the dog, whether it's short volatility or huge trades in the options markets that end up exacerbating moves in one direction or the other. I think those are the factors that are most important in the action we're seeing in the markets right now.
So then the strength in the markets, it's not what I've been saying in terms of money on the sidelines waiting for some clarity in the election. You think this is all structural. How much longer does this have to go on for?
Well, you know, when we've seen these kinds of unwinds, I mean, we saw it, I think I've been saying for quite some time now, we've seen it since the 2018 Volmageddon, which is we saw a lot of those short volatility trades just implode in February 2018 when the XIV blew up overnight. And so these trades lead to some short-term dynamics in both directions. In the short run, they become a self-fulfilling prophecy and pushing markets higher, but then they eventually implode. And so I do think we could see the implosion of these trades sometime over the next few weeks or months. It's really hard to say, but you watch things like Gamma and things. I think the Dark Index is another one. There's a website that tracks this stuff. Squeezemetrics.com is one that's very interesting to pay close attention to because it helps give you a visual representation of how dealers are positioned in the options markets. And so I think if we do see Gamma, getting up pretty high again, that's what we saw right at the high, was it just a few weeks ago, the early October high before stocks rolled over, we saw, Gamma levels getting very elevated. I think we'll probably see that again, and these trades will be unwound over a period of time again. And really, to me, this is just part of a very important topping process for the stock market that began really in June, July, and has been playing out since that time.
So, Jesse, what does this mean for the broad markets and the broad rotation theme that we were seeing into this election at the back end of this election or post-election, at least post-voting day? We saw more money flow into the NASDAQ. That so-called COVID trade was back on. How do you balance out where money is flowing when it comes to sectors or the balance between the lagging sectors and the outperforming sectors?
Well, one of the things that I've watched most closely for my entire career is insider activity. I'm talking about the top executives at public companies. And what we've seen over the last 6 months really is an unprecedented level of insider selling. We've seen selling, and it's really heavily concentrated in these tech names. Just this week, I think the last couple of days, Jeff Bezos sold another couple billion dollars worth of stock, but he's not alone. We're seeing it in across the tech sector. And, at the same time, we talked about this last time I was on, massive insider buying in the energy sector. And since we last spoke, I've seen, some concentrated buying in the financial sector, namely in the banks. I'm talking about the mostly regional banks. The insider buying is you see more in small cap companies than you do in larger cap companies. And that's also probably another important theme is that I think probably over the next insiders, the smart money essentially betting on small cap over large cap and value over growth, old economy over new economy types of trades over the next 6 to 12 months. Typically there's a 12-month horizon on a lot of this insider activity. So I do think 12 months from now, we will see a lot of these financials and energy potentially dramatically outperform tech and small cap better than large cap.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Jesse, let's wrap it up there. Pleasure spending the first two segments of this show with you. It's always interesting to hear what nuances you are watching for in the markets and trying to make sense of what has been a crazy year and looks like will continue to be a volatile and crazy year through, well, the next 2 months and into next year. Jesse, thanks again for your time, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, Corey. Always good to talk with you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on with the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, we are going to continue chatting kind of broad markets here, taking a look at a couple individual sectors, but trying to get a handle on what is going to work for investors moving forward now that we kind of have the election behind us, but we still have very much COVID around. I am chatting with Mike Larson. He writes the Safe Money Report. You can also follow Mike on Twitter at RealMikeLarson. Now, Mike, moving forward, I know this is still a contested election, or at least the vote counts are being contested, but it kind of looks like we're going to have Biden as the president and a split Congress. Seems like a lot more fighting that's going to happen in politics in the U.S., which will handcuff the Democrats for getting any, let's say, aggressive policies through. What does that mean for your strategy when it comes to viewing the financial markets?
Yeah, I mean, with an election like this, you never know what headlines you're going to wake up to in the morning or so, given some of the legal challenges that the Trump campaign's trying to put out there. But if you read the tea leaves and you look at, more importantly, what the betting markets and what Wall Street are basically arriving at in terms of conclusions, it's that Biden is the likely winner. I mean, they've declared him president-elect in a few places and so on. It looks like he's probably going to win, despite what Trump does to try and fight that. But at the same time, we never had that, the Democrats didn't get the other thing they wanted, which was that fabled blue wave, a taking over of the Senate in terms of Democratic control, winning enough Senate seats to take over the Senate while maintaining control on the House. Unfortunately for the Democrats, the House majority was maintained, but it does not look like we're going to get the Senate majority they were looking for. So what that does, to some degree, ironically enough, at least from a financial Wall Street financial market perspective and from a policy perspective in terms of the Fed, is more of the same. We're in a situation where heading into the election, the Fed was kind of the only game in town. You get all these misleading headlines from one side or the other saying, oh, we're right on the cusp of a big fiscal stimulus bill. It never happened. That was for months and months. We had the initial round of stimulus, the unemployment boosted benefits as well as the stimulus checks. But that all ran out in the spring and nothing has really happened since then. That was heading into the election. Now coming out of it, you're not going to see, I think, everybody just shake hands, sing kumbaya, and come up with a $2 or $2.5 or even $3 trillion stimulus like some of the Democrats were looking for. The Republicans aren't going to play along with that in Congress, in my opinion. So what you're likely to continue to see is a skinny, delayed stimulus, some targeted help here and there, but nothing that on the order of what we saw in the spring that really moves the needle for the economy, broadly speaking, or the market. And what we'll see is the Fed try and continue compensating by just printing more money and buying more assets. Jay Powell himself at this week's Fed meeting said that one of the key points of discussion at this meeting was what should they do with QE? How could they get it bigger? How could they diversify it? Could they buy different parts of the treasury market or different parts of the asset markets and so on? They're not spending this time here sitting around the table discussing this stuff just for their health. They're doing it because Wall Street's demanding more funny money and they're likely to deliver. And I think that, and again, that's especially true if they're not getting the help that they want from Congress or even the Biden administration. While it may want to do more Main Street stuff, it may want to do more things targeted at the middle class, it's not going to be able to get that, or it won't have that congressional majority to ram that through. So long story short, the election changes a lot of things from a political perspective. It's going to change some of the you know, other things going on, especially in geopolitics and world relations and so on. But from a pure markets, pure economic standpoint, it really doesn't move the needle much. So I think that, you know, a lot of the same strategies that were working best heading into the election are going to work best heading out of the election and into 2021.
So just more of the same then. But when you're balancing out, okay, some news that'll come out of the election, it sounds like through the rest of this year, balance that out with the COVID cases continuing to rise, lockdowns happening in Europe, potential lockdowns coming to North America, and also the Fed. We heard from them this week. It was a boring statement, but they're ready to inject more money into the system. What out of these are the major drivers that investors need to be aware of moving forward?
Sure. From a real economy perspective, a second wave or even third wave, depending on how you count it, of COVID cases that results in more restrictions, more lockdowns. We're certainly not going to get the full economy lockdown like we had back in the spring, but you're going to see targeted things being done in different states and likely, you know, in most of the country if the numbers continue the direction they're going here in the U.S. And obviously, as you mentioned, we're seeing more restrictions out of Europe, too. So from a real economy perspective, that's obvious negative. It's going to be bad for those sectors that rely on stronger growth, stronger spending, and so on to prosper. I mean, the same kinds of things that you've seen where, you know, travel stocks, for example, and you know, banks and things like that that really need a stronger GDP and more broad participation, they're going to continue to suffer. At the same time, the work-at-home type names, the long-duration type sectors like tech, and many of the safe money sectors, as I call them, things that have higher yields, more defensive business models, and resilient earnings, even in a tough economic environment, they're going to continue to do very well. Things like utilities, consumer staples, some select real estate names. And ironically enough, a small subsector that should do very well coming out of this is the cannabis space. One of my colleagues wrote that, you know, it wasn't the Democrats or Republicans that won, it was cannabis, because we have much more legalization, broader legalization in the U.S., and that trend certainly isn't going away on these ballot issues. So there are the overall message is that there's different spots, there's different battles, places, you know, sectors and stocks and so on that you can focus on, battles you can fight and make a decent chunk of money coming out of the election. But this is still going to be sort of a bifurcated split market where you're going to have these losing sectors like financials. You're going to have energy, which certainly in terms of traditional oil and gas has no friends in the Biden administration, that are going to continue to stagnate. So you really got to be smart about what you own and what you avoid.
Now, Mike, what about economic data? Because even on Friday, we had a non-farms payroll report that was better than expected. You dive into that report and you see that a lot of jobs were added at kind of the services level in terms of restaurants and bars. Those are obviously shaky jobs if we go back into lockdown. Does economic data even matter right now?
You know, I think that, again, people can look at some of this backwards-leaning data and say, sure, it was pretty decent, but yes, we're going to have more COVID-related fear, cutback in spending, especially as we head into these rising caseloads, into the colder weather. So I think people are definitely discounting that to some degree. But at the same time, for Wall Street, for the one percenters, for the asset owners, they like nothing more than more Fed aid, more Fed bailing out and backstopping of markets, more money printing. It sounds callous, but it's realistic. Wall Street doesn't care about Main Street to some degree. Why do you think you can have these outstanding market gains in some of these stocks that are doubling and tripling, even as, you know, thousands of restaurants are closing, unemployment still at very elevated levels and so on? It's because big business is gaining ground. Big corporations are getting help from the Fed. Wall Street's certainly getting help from the Fed. It's an odd, unfortunate policy mix. But as I always say, my best advice for investors is you have to invest for the markets, economy, and politics you have, not the ones you might want. So that means taking a realistic, bias-free approach to this market and pick your spots. Buy the things that are going to do well in this environment and into 2021, and avoid the stuff that's not, regardless of your personal feelings about it.
Okay, we will get into some more individual sectors, but I do want to ask you about the U.S. dollar, because as we're recording this about halfway through the day on Friday, the dollar is continuing to fall, almost crash, you could make the argument, sitting at 92.22 right now. That's lower than the October low. That's closing in on that early September low of 91.75, and there's a lot of air under that level, that 91.75 level. what's important about this falling dollar in your eyes?
Sure, you're absolutely right. The dollar is kind of clinging by its fingernails here in terms of value, and it's a pretty broad decline against a multitude of currencies. Frankly, it goes back to the Fed, right? If you have a fiscal policy that's not going to be strong, you're not going to get gangbuster GDP growth. You're going to continue to have slow growth with the Fed buying anything and everything that's not nailed down. We've seen in the past that that is generally speaking, negative for the U.S. dollar, but positive for things like gold, silver, and mining shares. I think it's no surprise that, you know, kind of coming out of this election, we've seen a nice rebound in gold. We've seen a nice rebound in silver and mining shares. And even things like Bitcoin that are sort of the new gold for some people, the, you know, technological gold, if you will, the, you know, cryptocurrencies are doing very well. So again, it's all sort of an assessment that the market's making, investors are making of, you know, a regime where the Fed's going to do even more. Central banks overseas are going to try and do even more to compensate for fiscal authorities that are either not going to want to do things in some countries or in the U.S. not going to be able to do them, at least not on a fully ambitious scale that a blue wave plus a Biden win would have empowered and enabled.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's also talk about the trade into gold and Bitcoin. Both are benefiting later on this week, actually shortly after the election kind of results, or at least voting day, let's call it. Gold popped higher, but Bitcoin's really making a run, closing in on all-time highs. Is this simply a protective move from traders?
Yeah, I think that, again, it's very much a move that confirms the overall view that we've laid out here in this discussion today. I mean, again, in an environment where the Fed's going to be printing more money to try and compensate for a lack of fiscal action, people can kind of see the writing on the wall. They can kind of see it's coming. I mean, you know, we've been talking about the central bank for years and years. And what do we know happens? The market demands, the market leads, the Fed follows and provides. So it's going to be a situation where the fact that they're even talking about it at this most recent Fed meeting tells you what happens. After they talk about it, they do it. And Wall Street sees that coming, and they're going to front run that. So you're seeing it in cryptocurrencies, you're seeing it in precious metals, you're seeing it in the breakdown in terms of which sectors are doing better and which sectors are doing worse. And I think, again, I think that that's the right assessment. This is, you know, a situation where heading into 2021, you want to stick with those kinds of those horses that got you here, because they're going to be the ones that get a second wind and that, you know, continue to thrive again next year and beyond.
So, Mike, I'm also curious about copper, because copper, as we're recording this, is over $3. It's about $3.15 right now. Keeps moving higher. To me, this election, though, doesn't move us any closer towards an infrastructure build or any sort of injection of capital in this area. Can you explain why copper continues to move higher?
You know, I think that some of that is tied to growth overseas. I mean, places like China that rebounded strongly from the COVID downturn earlier, they're doing pretty well now. So some of that, I think, is tied to that kind of resilience. But I think also, again, you know, you make a good observation, and I would tend to tilt my metals investments more towards precious metals versus base, because I do think that, you know, the slow growth environment in the U.S., the sort of stagnation that we're likely to see, that isn't a big robust sign for things like base metals and copper. And I would say one thing on infrastructure, that's probably a place where you can get targeted stimulus done. I think that some of the traditional Republicans outside of Trump, you know, the McConnells of the world and so on down here, would probably go along with a reasonable level of infrastructure spending. And obviously the Democrats would be big proponents of it. So I think, you know, when I say that we're not going to get a huge stimulus bill, I think there's likely to be some targeted infrastructure done, because especially congressmen on both sides of the aisle know that it helps buy votes in their districts. But it's not going to be, again, this $2 trillion, $3 trillion, you know, Green New Deal, you know, all this infrastructure, new highways, new bridges, new this, new that. That's not going to happen with a divided Congress. So, again, that's why I say from an overall standpoint, it's not going to move the needle in a huge way, the way we see with, say, you know, China's stimulus coming out of the great financial crisis.
All right, final comments deal with the bond market. Yields, especially on the long end, are rising. They had a little bit of a hit on, I believe it was Thursday, but Friday they're ending the week strong. That's been said because of the non-farms payroll report, but there is an uptrend here for long-term yields. Is that sustainable?
You know, I think, again, in a slow growth environment, but one where the economy is has been gradually coming back from the COVID threshold, you know, the sort of black hole we're staring into there, I think a the multi-week, multi-month, gradual move higher in yields, you know, we're not going to gain back much of that ground, but I don't see an environment where yields are just going to take off. Again, part of the reason they've been rising recently is the expectation of a huge borrow and spend, you know, blue wave type, massive infrastructure, massive fiscal aid, and so on, all that stuff happening. We've lost that, right? So while I don't think treasuries are a huge bull story where I want to expect, I'm expecting huge price run-ups and huge yield declines in the near to intermediate term, I also don't expect the opposite. I think, you know, treasuries are going to kind of just mark time. So it's going to be a little bit of a boring market. You know, the caveat to that would be, you know, if COVID does kind of get out of control and we see real fear return to the market, and the Fed's like, holy cow, we got to buy, you know, even more treasuries even sooner, then you could get a situation where prices rise pretty quickly. But I'm, you know, I'm more kind of in a neutral camp as far as interest rates are concerned.
All right, Mike, we're going to wrap it up there. Really appreciate your comments as always. It was an entertaining week in the sense that we were going to chat on Wednesday and we kept pushing it back for a bit more clarity and we kind of have clarity, but it seems like this is going to be just another added topic for everyone to consider, the whole election fighting through the rest of this year. And boy, oh boy, there's a lot on everyone's radar, rightfully so. Mike, thanks for your time this weekend, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I visit every day just to keep up to date on any key data points and some of the nuances within different sectors and markets. We're going to focus a lot on currencies to wrap up this first hour because the U.S. dollar had a very tough week again this week. And quite frankly, where it closes, we're not quite at the close yet, but if it closes in this lower 92 level on the dollar index, that's going to be the lowest weekly close since back in 2018. We're still viewing that 91.75 level as pretty important, as that was the intra-week low at the very tail end of August. Mark, let's start off with the dollar sell-off. After the election, you'd even called the dollar selling off after the election, as we chatted about a week or two ago. But what's important to note about this sell-off? And more importantly, do you see us continuing lower?
Yeah, no. So yeah, the dollar did have like one of its toughest weeks of the year. And the selling came quickly before the polls even really closed. And what definitely strikes me about this, the market had really set up for this. Think about like the Canadian dollar. On Monday, the Canadian dollar put in an outside down day. That is to say, it rose above last Friday's high, reversed lower, and closed below Friday's lows. This was a bearish sign. And this is, we turned it almost at 134, and we're finishing a week near 130. So I think this was a partly a broad-based U.S. dollar sell-off, and I think that it's that old story that I've been trying to keep people focused on. This framing of this, what's going on, is that the U.S. is, and this is not just now, but projecting ahead, the U.S. is going to have a large budget deficit and a large current account deficit. In such an environment, it needs higher interest rates to draw savers. But because we can't give those higher interest rates, given the conditions, low inflation, weak recovery, that the dollar has to sort of act as a shock absorber. And the dollar fell against all the major currencies this past week. Like you say, it's not exactly the close yet, but out of the currencies, the Japanese yen, which fell to 104 for the first time since March, was really the weakest of the major currencies. It only gained 1.3% against the dollar. What impressed me the most was the Australian dollar. It gained about 3.5% this week, and that's despite a rate cut and extended QE by the central bank. Sterling had a decent week too, up 1.6%, and there the Bank of England also eased policy. That's why I think that the fact that these currencies rallied despite the central bank's easing really tells me this is a weak dollar story rather than a strong foreign currency story.
Isn't that crazy, though, to consider that central banks are coming out and easing their policy even more, as we did hear from the Fed this week, and they essentially just copied their prior statement, but that their currencies moved up as central banks got easier. It really is just the market looking ahead and seeing the issues that the U.S. is going to have, and probably the fiscal bill, the spending packages that they're also going to be issuing here, too.
See, I think that generally last week what we really saw has been like the reflation story. Lower yields, rising stocks, a recovery in oil prices, a weaker dollar. I think that it all makes sense if you think that there's not going to be much of a change in the status quo, and the sequence by which the central banks are easing doesn't really matter that much. For sure, RBA, Bank of England, cut, eased policy this week. The ECB is probably the next of the major central banks to ease. They've practically committed themselves to it in December. But, you know, and this is one of the things that Powell said repeatedly in his press conference. The Federal Reserve is buying $80 billion of treasuries a month and $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities. Doesn't seem like any central bank is really topping that right now.
So the Fed, then, is still one of the easiest out there. How much of this election and the kind of split result that it looks like we're going to get is playing into the markets being stronger and the dollar also being weaker?
Yeah, and I think there's two elements for the election. One is just get it past us. And as soon as, that's why I mentioned about what happened on Monday in the Canadian dollar. As soon as this has been like the election itself has been hanging over the market. As soon as it was passed, it was like pent up activity. But the election itself, the results, what does it look like? So ironically, as we wind down the week, we don't know the results yet fully, but it looks like Biden's going to become president, and it looks like the Senate's going to be very close. That might not be decided till January, and the House of Representatives, the Democrats might have lost a couple of seats. What this essentially means, I think, points to is that there's no blue wave, and I think the blue wave, rightly or wrongly, has been painted to be more dramatic changes, less business friendly. Higher corporate taxes, rapid movement towards the Green New Deal in some fashion. I'm not sure that characterization is right, but I think it's generally that's the way people perceived it. And so that the fact that it's not a blue wave means that we can have the same types of pro-business policies without the tax hikes, basically. And so I think that that means also interest rates stay low. And so even with the U.S., we're talking about 75 basis points on our 10-year bond. Why not buy stocks, especially after they had that big pullback? 10-15% might be the buying opportunity people were looking for in those fangs.
Yeah, possibly. Either way, though, do you think that we're going to be seeing any government spending bill this year? Or is it going to have to wait until next year when Trump is fully out of office and when Biden takes power?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think that the Senate will take up what they call it, the skinny bill, which might be $500 billion. Isn't that funny? What Americans call skinny, $500 billion. But it turns out that, we did get a good jobs report just before the weekend. It was better than people expected. Unemployment rate dropped from 7.9% to 6.9%. I mean, put that in perspective, in Canada, from 9% to 8.9%. Canada still had a strong jobs report, but the U.S., just the sudden and sharp decline, I think, in the unemployment rate, I think, speaks to less pressure on the Republicans to deliver a big package. Whether this can get over the same problem we had before the election or not, it's a different story. And like I say, in the Senate, 100 seats in our Senate, 96 seats are more or less decided. Two seats have still, we're sort of waiting for the results, too close to call. And two seats might have to have, and these are both in Georgia, might have to have a runoff in early January. So my best guess is that we don't get a fiscal package yet, but we do get it next year in the first quarter, and it's for about $1 trillion.
Okay, so much, much lower than what the Democrats wanted, but any spending package, I think, would be looked favorably on by the market, right? Anything that gets through, some of that money naturally ends up in financial markets.
Yeah, I think that what people will be looking at is there any assistance for state and local governments? Is there an extended unemployment compensation package? And what about more of those Well, we had these PPP loans for like an employment protection scheme to help businesses. Grant loans that then would be forgiven. And so I think we do get this fiscal stimulus, and that's what it's going to be aimed at, I think, is more of small businesses and households.
Okay. So what matters for the markets then outside of just this spending bill whenever it gets passed? In all fairness, you can also say that the market is anticipating this, so maybe it won't have a big impact in terms of market moves when it is announced. Right now, news headlines still dominated by the election. Let's put that behind us. Is it COVID cases? Is it economic data? Is it other central bank moves? What actually matters?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I feel like kind of silly saying this, but I'm not sure that any of that matters in the short run. We do get the U.S. inflation measures next week, CPI, PPI. China reports their inflation measures as well. I think that now it's a question of, it's not going to be economic data, because remember, we've already got Q3 GDP numbers more or less behind us. All the central banks, all the major central banks met next week. We've got New Zealand meeting and the Reserve Bank of Mexico. But I don't see these as a driving impulse. I think it's a question of momentum. And I think that some of the momentum indicators are a bit stretched as we finish the week with the dollar, different dollar pairs are sort of flirting with their Bollinger bands. So I think that one is just current positions and momentum. And secondly, I do think this, you know, as the week winds down, we're hearing reports from Denmark that some COVID mutation first exposed in minks. Might make a vaccine more difficult. But we're not seeing much of a market reaction to that. I think that we'll see what happens over the weekend as this news story develops. But that's what I'd be focusing on, is just sort of the trading basics, really. You just had a big move in the markets. It looks like it can continue, but it's a bit stretched in the short run.
Isn't that the story of these markets in general, though, is that you can keep on making the argument that the moves have been stretched to the upside?
Well, yeah, though we did have a setback. And, like, that's why, like, what impresses me, like, think about what happened on the day of the election in the U.S. The euro, as soon as the polls closed, the euro tested 116. That's the lower end of its range. And so what happens? We snap back violently, and we finish this week near, say, 118.80. And so we go from the lower end of the range to the upper end of the range. And I think that as traders, we often have to ask ourselves, are we going to play for the breakout? And I think that rather than chase the market, I think that especially in the early part of the week, that we get some consolidation or a pullback. And I think that the risk reward changes a bit as we get to these upper end of the range. Last time we were above 119, we got close to 120, and the Europeans expressed some concern about the strength of the euro. This week we broke through, like I mentioned, that yen 104 level, and so the dollar then is at roughly 8-month lows against the yen. And the Japanese prime minister and the governor of the central bank expressed some concern, talking about the need for stability in the foreign exchange market. So I think that the risk reward changes as we approach these extremes. But dollar yen did break out, and at 104, that was support, is now acting as resistance.
Interesting, but we always need to be aware, right, of central banks, of governments, of anybody trying to talk these markets in a certain direction. That still does cause some short-term volatility. Mark, wrap us up with your broad strategy when it's coming to managing your own portfolio. How are you staying protected, but how are you ensuring that you're not missing out on just this steady rise in markets?
Yeah, no, I think that's a tough thing. I try to... Even though I help speculators and play for short-term moves professionally, I try to be an investor, a value investor, which means that I try to buy on sell-offs, basically. And the only thing I've done in the past couple of weeks is I bought Apple through the options market, really. I thought it was cheaper in the options market. And so I took advantage of that pullback in the FANGs. And I took Apple just because I thought that the problems it faces don't seem to be like game changers. But I think that the general approach and the principle here is, I think, is that you do your homework on stocks. You have a sense of where value is. And when a stock that you identify as having value sells off sharply, I think you have to think, well, is this the opportunity? And so I think people have to do their homework. And we can't all be short-term momentum traders if we're trying to put together like long-term savings.
All right. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there. That does it for the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the second hour, I am focusing more on the precious metals and especially the stocks. So everyone stick around for that second hour. And again, let me know what you think of the new format of the weekend show. Mark, thanks so much for your time this weekend. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.